Welcome. This is Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. We do this for you weeknights at 7, live financial news talk radio. You can join the conversation by calling us, reaching out to us through the Winning at Life app, emailing info@gregoryricks.com. I just shared over a few minutes ago the Facebook live streaming of the show. So you could watch the show as well over at winningatlife.com or Gregory, winningatlife.com. The Winning at Life Facebook page, as well as there's a link on the Gregory Ricks Facebook page. The Winning at Life app can help you text, email, call the show as well through that app, or you could simply call us. What might that topic be? Might be taxes. Another reason they're going up today, probably going up. We'll talk about it here in a moment. Why? In case you aren't aware of what happened a little while ago. And what about taxes? What can you do about it? What about savings, retirement, investing, social security decisions? 504-260-0995. One more time, I'll give you the number. 504-260-0995. Let's hear from you. Hey, James.
Hello, Gregory Ricks. Yeah, I'm still digesting some of these different breakdowns of what's happening in this big... Is it supposed to be an infrastructure bill? Is it supposed to be a stimulus package? Is this
no,
a tax bill?
No,
it's a
tax slash budget bill. It's reconciliation. And today they were introducing part one of it. The president said, to be clear, it's President Biden. In case some of y'all missed what happened the past few months, we changed presidents. I'm sure everybody's aware, but the President Biden said he was introducing part one. In a few weeks, he'll give you the other part of this bill. And there's some talk, unconfirmed source, you know, they didn't want to be named, but their goal, or Nancy Pelosi's goal, is to have this passed by July 4th. Interesting. Okay. So this isn't going to like happen in a few weeks and they ram it through in a few weeks. I think the ramming through in 90, it still is a 90 day window. Kind of. It's sitting like they're going to like, we'll get it through sometime this year. No, in a few months they plan to have it done.
There's no economic reason for that. That's totally political. So they can throw the first salvo out there, see how everyone reacts to it, and then reform the second part to address the criticisms that they think that didn't go the way they wanted to, I suppose, is what that sounds like to me.
Being it's a reconciliation bill, it limits the filibuster time basically to 20 hours, and then they vote on the amendments, and that stuff pretty much hurries through. And what they are doing from the standpoint, and I don't think they're concerned about bipartisan. What they expect is to have all of their members of their party and independents in line for the vote. That's what they have to work on. That's what they need a few months for, is to adjust and get everybody in line to vote and get that done. That's what the timeline's for. And right, it does involve increasing taxes, but there wasn't so much talk about that today, other than the wealthy and corporate taxes.
All right, we'll hit more of this after the numbers. Also, you're going to tell a story about net unrealized appreciation. 98% of the population in America does not know what that term means, but the other 2% might be very happy to find out that this little trick exists. Who needs to stick around for that segment? Who's the guy, the situation that could benefit from NUA discussions?
NUA really is a benefit for those that bought stock back in the day at a much lower price than what it's selling for now inside of your company plan. That's what you're looking for.
All right. So stick around for that. We got a lot of talk about after we get done with the numbers.
The numbers.
Hey there, welcome to the numbers segment on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. This is where we give you a snapshot of what happened in the financial world today. While you were out winning it live, follow along on the same charts and graphs we're looking at now. Winning It Life app has a tiny version of it. If you're already at a computer, though, your eyes will probably thank you with less strain if you go to the numbers page at GregoryRicks.com. And it was a split day, but we have NASDAQ getting really close to its record-breaking highs. They've been kind of getting pummeled a little bit lately. But the Dow Jones was down about 0.25%. S&P was up, almost closed above 4,000 today, 3,972.
But it was a record high for the S&P 500.
Right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to just underplay what they did. Yes.
It is a record close.
We've been getting a lot of those, so I don't want to minimize it. You're right. That's like the 17th record close for the S&P this year. But NASDAQ was up 1.5%, which was they had the most fun today out of the big three.
These actually are big deal. I know it's commonplace. It's like, you know, back in the 70s, sending spaceships to the moon. You know, it's like, yeah, we've seen that before. No, these are special things. Okay, you got all three. So the Dow, not so happy today. NASDAQ, good increase at 1.5%. S&P, record day. Didn't take a lot to get there, but it's there. 10-year Treasury, slightly off today. We're at 1.74%. Oil's off, $59.60. Brent crude, $63.07. We have gold moved up. Today, we're at $1,708.30, and silver closed at $24.46.
Yeah, do you have any concern that crude broke through the magical, invisible, arbitrary barrier of $60? I just made the comment that it was so comfortable being above 60, and then I ran my mouth last week and jinxed it.
And it broke down, and then it's moving up. But that's kind of its range of upper 50s to mid 60s that it moves around in between that area. And I think you're going to see that for a while.
All right. Well, lumber back above $1,000 for board feet. It's at $1,007 per board feet. Bitcoin in after hours trades just a shade over 59,000. So it's been doing, putting on a little bit of weight lately, even though it's not getting a whole lot of headlines. The short sheet's a pretty even mix of red and green. A couple of big movers, though, are Tesla and Harley. Tesla was up 5%. Harley was up 6.8%. And that was on top of Harley's big day yesterday where they were up something like, 4%? But that's two big up days in a row for Harley. It's not the e-bikes, is it? It's not the scooters? Sorry, I just like picking on the e-bikes. We do love the brand Harley itself. Gregory's a fan. But two great days in a row, saving the classic American brand.
Yeah, and did you have some others to come in on? Because I'm going to go back to the indexes.
No, not at all.
For the quarter, the blue chip Dow S&P 500 rose 7.8% and 5.8% respectively.
Oh, right, it's the end of the quarter.
This is the end of the quarter. This is a pretty big deal. One of four that we'll have this year, end of quarters. So It's nice to see it was their fourth positive quarter in a row. The NASDAQ kind of underperformer for the quarter, gaining just 2.8% as the group was pressured by rising interest rates. And that gain today helped that look a lot better, being up 1.5% today, kind of made it look good. Technology stocks are especially sensitive to rising interest rates. See if I have another thought on there. And by the way, the S&P 500's 4.2% gain in March marks its best month since November. So all in all, it's a pretty good report on the first quarter.
So Pi over there in the Facebook says, does free money have anything to do with it? Yes, free money very much has something to do.
A lot.
Yeah, when you have $3 trillion more dollars chasing the same amount of assets, the price is necessarily going to have upward pressure on it. So, yeah, a lot of the happiness we're seeing in the stock market, a lot of the 17 record closings we have, it's easy to see how they wouldn't have happened without the stimulus packages, the sugar high there. Not to say that it's good long term, but yeah, it's nice now. It's just like when you run up your credit cards. It's nice when you do it. Fun part's not, the less fun part is paying it off.
What, can I ask a technical question?
Sure thing.
What is going on with this clock here? What is that? Is it time moving backwards or something?
No, time's moving forward. The original clock we used for some reason, that website was down today. So I found a backup plan. And this one, the only thing different, y'all, is the text is in bold and the second hand doesn't just change. It scrolls like the old gas station scrolling. Remember all the old gas pumps? And this has thrown Gregory off, which I think is kind of funny. It's weird when you get in a little habit of just seeing the same clock every day and you see one with a different font and it scrolls instead of just flips. Throws you off a little bit, doesn't it?
Well, okay. This is what I've got to look at here, right?
Yes.
Okay. This is what was throwing me off.
Because it's a 19 military, instead of a 7?
Yeah, it's military time, right?
It is.
Yeah, that's what's throwing me off. Haven't seen it in a while.
Fair enough.
Used to see it a lot when I was in the military quite a while back, but. Okay, so I'm looking at the correct number there. Okay, moving on, since we figured out my technical problems here, but the president unveiled his $2 trillion infrastructure plan, economic recovery package. Plan aims to revitalize U.S. transportation, infrastructure, water systems, broadband, and manufacturing, and other goals. An increase in corporate tax rate to 28%, measures designed to prevent offshoring of profits will fund the spending. I had also read, and I'm kind of pulling some information from CNBC. And one of the things, because this is budget reconciliation, we're going to talk about that a little bit when we come back. But the president said, the tax hike combined with measures designed to stop offshoring of profits would fund the infrastructure plan within 15 years. Like, they ever get that right? I'm like...
skeptical a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm James Parker. We're Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Welcome back to us. Give us a call if you have a question. I want to talk about taxes, investing, savings, and I've got some thought about percentage of people that actually have some money saved. We'll get to that in a little bit on the show. I just want to talk to you a little bit more about your money being spent on your behalf. And more money. Let's see. Let's go over to the debt clock. Debt clock.
Man, we were having such a good day. How can you have a good day after you see this thing?
Money being spent that you're contributing in through taxes and money that you haven't contributed in yet. Plenty of it. U.S. national debt shows at $28.1 trillion. Debt per citizen, $85,000. Debt per taxpayer, oh, that's a different number.
You want to plug in your charts there?
Am I not plugged in?
Yeah, we can put it on the screen.
Oh, I don't have it.
No sweat.
Handy here.
Just tell me the horrible news again.
What's
the
debt per taxpayer is $224,455. U.S. federal spending this year is $6.7 trillion. U.S. federal budget deficit is $3.2 trillion. Now, that's official, but let's give you the actuals. U.S. federal spending actual is just over $8 trillion.
Wow.
U.S. federal budget deficit actual, $4.5 trillion. And U.S. federal tax revenue, $3.477 trillion. So that's what's going on there. Now, let's get back to the budget reconciliation process. I was asked some questions about this recently, more than once. And I'm over at ncsl.org for some help with you on this. Reconciliation process was created by the Congressional Budget Act of 1974, was designed to allow for expedited consideration of certain tax, spending, and debt limit legislation. The process begins with the passage of a budget resolution in both chambers of Congress, which include reconciliation instructions. These instructions choose the relevant congressional committee or committees that will have jurisdiction over the legislation. These instructions can direct certain committees to craft legislation or legislative language increasing or decreasing federal revenue spending levels or the debt ceiling. The decisions are left to the discretion of each committee to implement policy changes to achieve budgetary targets set by the reconciliation directives. What's important about this is this is where reconciliation procedures come in handy. While general Senate rules allow virtually unlimited debate and a number of obstacles to stop the passage of general legislation, reconciliation bills can be passed quickly and only with a simple majority. They don't need the 60 votes. And that's because reconciliation legislation limits Senate debate on the bill to 20 hours and therefore is not subject to the filibuster. This is why you hear about the filibuster, like, oh, we got to get rid of the filibuster, because they would like to just roll with a simple majority on everything. Well, when that's all you have and you want to be in charge and run it, yeah, you would want it to be that way. But we have the structure for a reason, I feel. Procedures do not limit the number of amendments that can be offered during the Senate's initial consideration of the bill. As a result, once the 20-hour limit is expired, remaining amendments are considered with little or no debate. The process is known as Votorama. How about that? And while this tool can be used on a number of issues, it's important to point out that you can't use reconciliation for just anything. First of all, budget reconciliation can only be brought up, and this is important right here. It can only be brought up a maximum of three times per year per budget resolution. Also, Congress has banned reconciliation from being used to increase deficits. Finally, the largest restriction on budget reconciliation is the Byrd Rule, which was named after its sponsor, Robert Byrd, Senator. This allows senators to block provisions of reconciliation bills that are outrageous to reconciliation's basic purpose of implementing budget changes. I don't know that they're adhering to that. So this should deter committees receiving reconciliation directives to add a wide range of unrelated provisions that could lead to more controversy. And I think we're going to have a lot of that. Reconciliation, this was also interesting. I found in researching this today, how often has reconciliation been used? You got a number, James, you want to throw out there?
Maybe 5 times.
It's more. Since 1980, lawmakers have enacted 20 reconciliation bills to steer controversial budgetary policies through the Senate. It doesn't include the one passed a few weeks ago.
Okay.
It was 20 before that.
Well, it's been my experience. Reconciliation is one of those things like the filibuster where it gets threatened to be used a lot, but do they actually use it? It's only been, I can only think of a handful of times. So 20 sounds about right, I suppose.
And that takes me to another comment here from the CNBC. So as of now, Democrats have 2 more shots at budget reconciliation before the 2022 midterms. And that's why I went over that. It was important to understand that. So they've used one. They've got 2 more. Schumer hopes to persuade the chamber's parliamentarian to allow Democrats to use the process at least 1 more time beyond those 2 opportunities, according to NBC News. And they did pass a reconciliation bill of $1.9 trillion without a Republican vote. And I'm sure that's probably the plan here as well. So they've got 2 more shots, but they want to get another. So obviously they have something else lined up. So there's a limit, but if they do pass this, well, they've burned 2 of the 3. I don't think they get the extra, the gratis.
That's a little something extra to watch for. See, they have to twist the rules.
So I just wanted to bring you something you probably hadn't picked up anywhere else.
Cool stuff. Thank you. Let's do Jeff in Mobile. Jeff, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Jeff?
Yes. Just got a question. my wife has suffered a stroke. We are both 59. Well, I'm getting ready to be 59 in May. She just turned 59. We have approximately between us, I have probably 250,000. She has probably 75 to 100,000 in 401ks. I don't know what to do. I don't know if she's going to be able to go back to work or not. And her work is extremely tasking on her memory and ability to use the computer and everything. I'm the primary earner in the house, but I'm just looking for some advice on what I should do now.
Do you have money outside of those 401ks?
No. In bank accounts, probably a total of about $40,000.
Okay, so you do have some good, that's a good amount of emergency. Probably not enough now that you think about it, right? Probably not enough.
Correct.
Okay, so is this her not working? How's that going to impact the household income? It's going to hurt?
Yes. It's probably going to take away. That's where we get our insurance through also. And
That's a big shift.
Yeah.
There. Do they have any type of disability program there at work?
She's already getting in. They've started the paperwork on the short-term disability. And so, I don't know. I'm not a finance guy. I'm just in a position right now to where I've never handled any of our finances, and I'm just catching up on learning how to pay all the bills and everything. So
the short-term disability, what's the percentage of replacement of income? Like 60% or 50%, or you may not know that answer.
I don't know at this point. Okay. Really, I don't.
Yeah, it's not going to replace it all, and typically it's in the neighborhood on the short term of 60%, and it could be anywhere from a few months to 6 months, typically, maybe some cases up to a year. And so your feeling is she's been pretty impacted by the stroke, and I really feel for you there and sorry that happened to your best friend. With that said, I think one of the things I was thinking of that this is probably going to eventually lead to, and of course it's going to be subject to the doctor's determination of whether or not she's capable of going back to work. But if she's injured from this stroke, which that's what typically happens, and affecting memory and such, as you're saying, does it make it where she can work? And one of the things you would want to consider is Social Security disability. And I've got two points here. One of the main things of getting that going through disability is it's like turning on her Social Security at FRA now. So, So one of the things I would do is I would, in this way, I would set the clock. I would reach out to Social Security and ask for an appointment saying, hey, we need to talk about Social Security disability. So it kind of sets a point in time. It kind of registers it as a start date. It's going to take you probably a year or more to get it on average. Mm-hmm. Her situation, it might happen quicker, but it takes a while. There's a lot of people in line. We talked about that recently on the show. And that way, if it takes a year to actually get it started, you get back compensation to the start time where you set the clock, so to speak. Mm-hmm. That's going to help. Once she gets past this, the short-term disability, that might end the job if she can't go back to work, which would impact your health coverage. So you could probably continue COBRA perhaps up to a year, depending on the company rules, and that's covering both of you. That's a budget impact. Besides losing her income, that's a bill of could be a couple grand more a month in cost until you get to age 65 for Medicare coverage. But she could get covered earlier through turning on disability as well. So that would help on that side. It's good that you have 40,000 because some of that's probably going to get spent getting you to that disability turning on and helping from that standpoint as well. Beyond age 59 and a half, you know, those funds of hers, for example, you know, that's in the 401k could be accessed. You just want to minimize that because you're kind of talking about overall, if I understood what you said, you've got about 250,000 and she has somewhere close to 100,000 in her 401k, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So that's 350,000 plus 40,000 in emergency fund. So you just, you want to look at eliminating expenses that you don't need, which you're probably not. I just have this sense you're not this guy. Y'all are excessive spenders anyhow from that standpoint. And but this insurance is going to be something to cost you. But I think one of the key things is go ahead and start that clock by reaching out to Social Security and getting that conversation started regarding applying for her disability coverage. I think that's an important to do next step to do at this standpoint. Do you have any other questions for me, Jeff?
No, I think you've given me a good starting point, and I certainly do appreciate it. I called you because my brother talks to you every now and then, and I just thought I'd try giving you a call too. So
okay, we're here for you, and the office can help you if you need it. You know, at my daytime job, Gregory Ricks and Associates, the Total Wealth Authority. Just reach out to us if we can be of help, Jeff. Best to you and your wife.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. All right, move right along.
Yes.
William in Covington, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, William?
How do we determine what inflation is going to be over the next 10 years in light of the government spending that we're seeing?
That I am working on some research now to have a better answer to that. We get this question often a lot more on the show, and it's on my mind more. But, you know, the markets are kind of worried about it. The treasuries are worried about it. The Federal Reserve has said it's going to jump up, but they want to make sure it doesn't pull back, that it kind of stays the course before they raise interest rates. And clearly, we're going to see inflation move up. Markets are going to let you know, especially the NASDAQ, when it really sets in place. The 10-year Treasury is going to be impacted by the yield, and the Fed's going to ignore it because they don't want to raise interest rates in the next 2 years. Go ahead, ask that question.
I'm sorry. Do you think we're possibly looking at a similar situation under the President Carter when the prime interest rate was in the 20s? Or I guess we don't know, or is that, I guess that's a possibility. I'm not sure.
I just say, gosh, that's a lot to take in. Now, if I widen the canal here quite a bit, could we in the next 30 to 40 years see that again? Yeah, we absolutely could. In the next decade, I don't know if it quite shows up, but we may feel it more than what it's showing up. And that's one of the things I'm wanting to put together a couple segments on, and maybe we'll get it ready by Saturday or next week for Saturday's show. But I'll cover it both weeknight and Saturday. But to kind of, what is the real inflation there? And it is more than what it's showing, you know, give you that. But I think we're going to see that, and where some of the look, prices are going up, and do they pull back to what they were? I've had discussions about, you know, the per thousand board feet of lumber. I've had discussion about housing prices in Florida have skyrocketed. I had a friend I was having a discussion with, like, you know, he bought this 4-bedroom beach house for, say, $500K, and he's being offered upwards of $900,000 for it. Well, should I sell it? I said, what are you in the beach house flipping? You know, it's not on the beach, but he's not far from it. You get that? Because then we'd be seven figures, of course. And then it could get washed away. So he's not quite on the beach, but he's like, God, I could bank this money. And I said, well, remember, you got to pay taxes. And one consideration is selling it now at the lower taxes, but are you going to want another place out there. Yeah, I'd have to find another place. Well, then that one's going to cost you a bunch of money, and you don't need the money. So why would you consider that? He's, well, it might, the price might pull back. I don't think that price is going down. I had another friend tell me about his daughter trying to buy a house in Austin. It's through the roof. And I don't think those prices are going down. So the Fed thinks inflation's going to move up and pull back. I don't think it's going to pull back. So we're going to get above 2% inflation rate here soon, by the way they measure it. And I think it's going to stay there and probably keep working its way up, William. Your thought? Quick, yes. 20 seconds.
Yeah, thank you so much for the information. I'll continue to listen to the show. And I have some similar feelings as to what you have as well. Yeah.
And I'm going to give you some support on that in coming episodes. Yeah, actually, I think both conversations are tough. Yeah, and I really felt for him and having something happen to his best friend in life. And, you know, they were not playing. You don't. You're like, you know, we may need to get ready because, you know, we're turning 59. One of us might get sick. You know, you're thinking, yeah, 20 years from now, but not right now. And it always goes to that, you know, you just don't know when something can happen, whether it's a health, just even say for a car accident or something. It's just so many things can just come upon you. And it's also important on the savings. And it was good to hear they have 40,000-ish in the bank. But when you speak of, And I've got another piece here from Yahoo Money that kind of ties into this. And they were showing a study, and it's going to go on my blog over at GregoryRicks.com tomorrow. But Yahoo Money states 1 in 4 Americans have no retirement savings. And those who do, guess what they're doing? Not enough. They're not saving enough. PwC's Retirement in America report.
PricewaterhouseCooper, I assume.
I guess. I didn't look into that detail. I'm good with the acronym for now. Actually, I did pull it up over here because I always like to go look at the basis of that. So I'll jump over that.
Yeah, I read a lot of these financial surveys in the media. So
yeah, well, I like surveys. And once again, I didn't catch it here. But with that said, we don't.
Why would you doubt me? Of course I'm right.
It's Yahoo Money. So, and Stephanie Asimico is the reporter. And once again, we'll have these articles I look at and read quite a bit every day, by the way. And it's just kind of my thing to stay ahead in this business and pass the information along to you in my day job, as well as 6 days a week on Winning at Life Radio. And basically they were saying, In this study, 1 in 4 Americans have no retirement savings, and those who are saving aren't saving enough. Bernadette Geis over at Yahoo Money said, those that are saving on average, what they have saved will afford them like $1,000 a month of actual cash while they're in retirement. Here's what the report found, that the median retirement account balance for 55 to 64 year olds is $120,000. Jeff and his wife have almost triple that in theirs at $350,000. And they fall into that age bracket. When you consider their emergency savings, they're 3 times above the median. So when you divide that 120 over 15 years, yeah, it gives you about $1,000 a month on top of, hopefully you have Social Security benefits for both of you. Lack of retirement preparedness is leading a path of looming crisis, Guy said, as Social Security is projected to be depleted by 2034. Now, I've done shows about this 2034 thing. It isn't happening. Look, they are not cutting Social Security checks if they can just write a check for $2 trillion and put out another bill that they're going to pass for $2 trillion. So you're going to tell me out there in 2030, yeah, we spent all that money back in 2021. We can't help you, so we're cutting your check. It's not happening. It would create a global crisis, and they're going to raise the tax on both sides of the employer-employee, and it takes care of it for 75 years. So don't be in that. But Social Security shouldn't be your only source of income for retirement. So here are some other stats. Among 60 years old or older, 13% have no savings. That number increases to 17% among 45 to 59-year-olds and 26% among 30 to 40-year-olds. And get this, the youngins, those 18 to 29, 42% have nothing saved. Look, just start doing 50 a month. Start doing something. If you don't, you're going to reach a point that you don't have anything. It's like one in four don't have money saved. So I think it's really important. And when this has happened to Jeff and his wife, you know, they do have some merchant money. They do have savings, but they know this all of a sudden the road to retirement took a hard right turn all of a sudden. And like, oh my goodness, what do we do? Well, one of the options is her employer had short-term disability, which is good. And to look at in her situation, probably to go ahead and start that process on Social Security disability. Because remember, it's based on, it would turn on now, her not working for the next 5 years, 6 years to her FRA will reduce it some, because subject to whether, you know, she has 35 years of, 35 years of earnings, the best years. So if she doesn't have 35 years, say she has 30, that's going to plug in zeros, and then they average it monthly over the 35 years. But it's Social Security disability benefits going to be based upon her FRA number. And that would be good if when she does qualify or it gets turned on for her, that what is what she will bring to the household and would then shortly thereafter make her eligible for Medicare because she's on disability. There'll be a few more month wait on that, but she could get that. And then he's got to worry about getting his coverage. You got a question, James?
Explain the clock. You had mentioned the clock and Jeff just kind of said, yeah, like he knew what you were talking about.
What I'm talking about is you reach out and initiate that conversation that kind of says, hey, we need to talk about Social Security disability. My wife has become ill and probably can't work again. We need to talk about that. That's like when you reach out to say Social Security and say, hey, I'm thinking about turning on Social Security early. You call in to initiate the process of getting an appointment or a discussion. You've set the clock. You've set a point in time. This is where the discussion started. So even if you're not full retirement age and you had that call 4 months ago and you call back, yeah, I want to start it. They're going to start it based on that 4 months back, and you'll get the back pay for that. Otherwise, you won't. And he could wait 6 months from now and say, okay, well, yeah, we need to do the disability. No, do it now, because 6 months later would then be the start of the time, and it's still going to take you 6 months to a year and a half to get it started. So when I say start the clock, I mean call Social Security and start the conversation. Even though you don't have all the details and anything, start the conversation.
Yeah, you had taught us that a few years ago. I want to make sure Jeff heard it.
Yeah.
So thank you on that one. All right, tomorrow we're going to talk a little bit more about this infrastructure plan, because a lot of what is going to pass through this show has to do with taxes as far as this is laid out. And it's one of these things where the conversation you just had with William and Covington about inflation, you know, that's one of the things that...
That was the other tough conversation, because that actually is kind of tough, and his worry is valid. And that was really hard question. Are we going to see Carter-like inflation? I don't think near term, but I hope I'm wrong about that. But over the next 40 years, yeah, I think we will. Somewhere in that, give me a wide moat. Yeah, I think somewhere out there we probably do.
Okay, Gregory has a new webinar that's starting next week. This is the No Compromise webinar. He's brought in a couple of his friends who are authors, and they collaborated on a book. And this is specifically attacking tax planning for retirement.
Yeah, some of your money, we need to get it to zero. We need tax efficiency. You don't need to be taxed on ordinary income, on all of your sources of income. You need more than one source of income. Don't let Social Security be the only source. You need to save and have other sources, but we need tax efficiency with taxes going up.
All right, it's a complimentary webinar. You can sign up at gregoryricks.com. There's a little blue banner that pops up at the bottom of every page. First one starts on Monday, so go check it out at gregoryricks.com. If you want to call his office directly, it's 504-832-9200. I'm James Parker. We're winning at life with Gregory Ricks.